welcome back to Regionally Speaking. I'm your host, Dee Dotson. Early childhood development, road safety, and mental health services are front of mind as Indiana's Lieutenant Governor Suzanne Crouch travels the state as president of the Indiana Senate. She's emphasizing the importance of partnership between community organizations to help fill the gaps in care and services, as well as how collaboration at the state, county, and local levels is critical to proactively help individuals in a mental health crisis or before they are in a crisis. Lieutenant Governor Crouch joins us now to discuss why she recently participated in a national panel representing the Hoosier State, sharing more on advocating for improving access as well as affordability of mental health care services. Lieutenant Governor Crouch, as always, thank you for joining us on Regionally Speaking.
Dee, it's always good to be with you, even if it's virtually.
Lieutenant Governor Crouch, I want to start our conversation by discussing a topic that is front of mind for everyone here at Lakeshore Public Media, as we are embarking on a six-year multimedia project focused on early childhood development. And that project is called Building Blocks Fueling the Future. And as a matter of fact, the first episode of this project will be released on Lakeshore PBS in October. Now, the Hunt Institute hosted the 2024 Early Childhood Leadership Summit, and you were a panelist. Tell us about this session, as well as what you shared with the audience as the Lieutenant Governor of Indiana.
Oh, thank you, Dee. Thanks for the opportunity to share how important early childhood education is to, you know, our children, to the immediate workforce and to the workforce of the future. And one of the things that makes me so passionate about this issue is that in 2013, when I was a state representative, I was co-author of the legislation that put in place the On My Way Pre-K program, where we actually have early childhood education and children are allowed to attend early childhood education on vouchers. And we actually increased the percentage of children that are able to attend this past legislative session. We worked on how to make childcare more accessible to be able to get more people into the workforce. How do we make it more accessible and affordable? And one of the things that I shared with the listening audience, which was comprised of elected officials throughout the United States, was what we're doing in Indiana to make child care and early childhood education more accessible and affordable is that we looked at reducing the age of which child care workers can work. Used to be they had to be 18 under supervision or 21. And now we can hire people who are 18 years of age with supervision and, you know, even as young as 16 years to assist in certain areas with that adult supervision. To be able to get more people into the workforce, to be able to take more children and be able to get our parents into the workforce. DWD did a study, it's been over a year ago, and at that time they determined there were over 100,000 Hoosiers who wanted to be in the workforce but couldn't for one reason or another. And half of those were women. Now, Dee, you and I know the women. The reason those women probably weren't in the workforce is that they didn't have access to affordable childcare. And so us taking the efforts to be able to look at how can we make childcare more available to more people for today. But then, again, equally important is while a child's brain is developing from the ages of birth to 5 years of age, that's when the most development takes place in the brain. We're able to get these children in early childhood education to be able to give them positive influences, to be able to help them learn so that they're able to read by the third grade and be able to be successful in school and life, to be able to develop the executive skills. And by that, I mean kind of the social skills about how to work together, how to learn how to resolve conflict, you know, how to learn how to, you know, be able to share and work as a team to be able to get things accomplished. Those are things that you and I take for granted, but for many children who do not come up and have the advantage of two parents being able to be invested in them and knowing what to do, this is a huge, huge, huge advantage for these children to be able to attend early childhood education. And then equally important is that it will reduce the trauma in children's lives and be able to help in terms of reducing mental illness in the future. So, you know, it's a win-win-win. Indiana's made some great strides, but we have a lot of work to do. And in my opinion, we ought to work towards universal, fully funded early childhood education for all children voluntarily, so that if parents choose, they can send their children to early childhood education. If they choose not to, you know, they don't have to, and they can educate them at home. But we need to make that available to every child to give them equal opportunity to be successful in life.
That is so awesome. I'm glad that you shared that. That is so awesome. And we are so grateful for the work that you have done. Going back to when you were at the State House co-authoring the On My Way to Pre-K bill. Now, Lieutenant Governor Crouch, it's so hard for me, at least, to believe that summer is really almost over. And as the president of the Indiana Senate, one of the agencies you oversee is the Indiana State Department of Agriculture. Now, as the harvest season approaches, the ISDA released a list of safety tips for motorists approaching large farm equipment. And it sounds like, for me, it sounds like patience is the key for drivers. Can you highlight a few tips from that list?
Absolutely, Dee. You know, you hit it right on the nail on the head when you said that it's harvest season for our 94,000 farmers here in Indiana. And Indiana is such a huge agriculture state. You know, we're the seventh largest exporter of ag products in the country. And so as a result of that, we have our farmers working very hard to get the harvest in, to be able to feed Hoosiers, to feed Americans, and to feed the world. And what that means is there's a lot of large farm machinery on the roads these days. And in 2022, there were four vehicles involved in farm crashes, resulting in one death. We don't want that to be repeated. We want our motorists to be safe. We want our farmers on this machinery to be safe. And so what we are asking motorists to do, and you really, really hit it right on the head when you said patience is a big part of this. We want them to be alert when they see farm equipment, understand that they're doing their job, and that when they can, they will pull that equipment off the road. But, you know, you can't always just pull a large equipment off the road, because many times roads, particularly in our rural areas, have ditches running alongside them. So be alert, understand that, you know, they're doing their job. Be careful when you're passing. Do not pass in a no-passing zone. I know I've seen motorists do that. They're behind farm equipment. It's a no-passing zone. They think, well, it's going slow, I can go ahead and pass them. Don't do that, you know, because you never know when a car is coming from the other way. And then avoid tailgating, as sometimes farmers have to make quick stops, and that would not be good if you're following too close. But more than anything, be patient and be respectful, understanding that they're doing their job, and when they can, they will pull that farm equipment off the road and let you pass. Nothing is so important, and you should never be in such a big hurry as to endanger your life or to endanger the lives of our farmers doing their job. So please, please be patient, be respectful, and be alert.
Now, I want to pivot our conversation, Lieutenant Governor Crouch. So you have been crisscrossing the state speaking about mental health on panels, as well as being a part of community conversations. And as a matter of fact, late last month, you were actually here in the region participating in the Northwest Indiana Mental Health Community Conversation organized by State Representative Mike Andrade, as well as other community members. Tell us more about that meeting or any of the meetings that you have been a part of, as well as what the state and local groups are doing to address mental health and the epidemic of addictions.
Well, thank you, Dee. And, you know, I've stated on your program many times that for me, this is a very personal issue, because my mother struggled with depression. My older brother, Larry, died by, you know, ingesting too much alcohol. He just was an alcoholic, and he literally drank himself to death. And then my younger sister, Nancy, died in her early 30s by suicide. Our daughter, Courtney, our only child, also is 17 years sober, which we're very proud of this October, and is bipolar. So, you know, I have lived with those family members that, you know, have inherited genes that predispose them to these conditions. It's why I'm so passionate about getting help to those that need it. We in June had our second annual mental health summit, attended by 500 people from all over the state and the nation. And one of the things that was so impressive to me is we had so many national leaders attending, and they stated that Indiana is the only state in the country that is doing something of this magnitude. So what we wanted to do was to continue the conversation. And so I have been every week moving around the state doing mental health talks and summits, many ones throughout communities. There in Northwest Indiana last month, was in Noblesville and Hamilton County yesterday, continuing that conversation. And what we really are highlighting is this month, September, is Suicide Prevention Month. And as I mentioned, for me, it's very personal. My sister Nancy died by suicide. The toll that takes on the family is just indescribable. And it's not just the family, it's our workforce, it's our budgets. And so it is Suicide Prevention Month. We're trying to raise awareness about that, removing the stigma, having these conversations where we talk about it, the fact that it's okay not to be okay all the time, and there is help for you. You know, we have our 988 Suicide and Crisis Hotline, where now today, anyone who is in crisis, or if you just have a question, call 988. Speak to a trained professional who will get you connected to resources, and if you are in crisis, we will send a mobile crisis response team out to help you. And so we want people to know that, you know, it's okay not to be okay all the time. Life is a journey and there are ups and downs. And when you're down, reach out and get help, because we do not want to lose a single Hoosier. And in this past May, we learned of a 10-year-old boy who took his life, who lived in Johnson County, because of bullying at school. That is incomprehensible that this baby, you know, took their own life. And so let us be sure that we get the word out there that 988 is available to anyone that is struggling, or if you just have a question, you know, if you just want to know, where do I direct someone? What are the warning signs? You know, What if my child is, you know, struggling? How do I get them help? Call 988. And that individual, that trained professional, will get answers to your questions and help you. And, you know, it's been a huge success. You know, a year ago, you know, we doubled the amount of calls in a month, you know, from a year ago. And so we want to continue to raise awareness. And thank you, Dee, for the opportunity to educate your listeners about 988.
Before I let you go, I just have to say that, again, you have shared your family's history and you have worked tirelessly to break the stigma around mental health. And I also want to say thank you to your family for allowing you to share their struggles with mental illness. And I think that it's safe for me to be able to speak on behalf of all Hoosiers when I say that not only your courage, but your honesty and your grace on display every time you share has really and truly helped someone. So I thank you for, again, always being able to avail yourself to join us on Regionally Speaking, but more specifically, because of the advocacy work that you're doing around this topic, I know that you are changing lives and helping so many Hoosiers. And so, again, I thank you for joining us on Regionally Speaking.
Well, indeed, thank you for getting the word out. This is how we raise awareness, and this is how we remove stigma by having these conversations. So thank you.
Suzanne Crouch is the Lieutenant Governor of the wonderful state of Indiana. As always, Lieutenant Governor Crouch, we thank you for joining us, and we look forward to having you back with us next month.
Enjoy this beautiful weather, Dee.
Lieutenant Governor Suzanne Crouch serves as the President of the Indiana Senate, overseeing the Indiana State Department of Agriculture, the Indiana Housing and Community Development Authority, the Office of Community and Rural Affairs, and the Indiana Destination and Development Corporation. For more information, visit www.in.gov/LG. You're listening to Regionally Speaking on listener-supported Lakeshore Public Media. focusing on public affairs that educate as well as inform viewers, while also dedicating a safe space for delicate life stories, Lakeshore PBS will premiere the 8th season of the hit topics-based nationally syndicated The Whitney Reynolds Show on Monday, October 21st at 6:30 p.m. Joining me now to give a sneak peek of the upcoming season, including celebrity guests like Dan Aykroyd and Chef Duffy, as well as everyday life heroes, is Whitney Reynolds herself. Whitney, as always, I'm so excited to have you. So thank you for joining me today on Regionally Speaking.
Dee, it is so great to be back. I can't believe our fall season is almost here.
Whitney, it's so funny that you say that because you have literally been a part of the Lakeshore Public Media family since the early days of the Whitney Reynolds Show. And as I always start our conversations in the past, I have to say to you, welcome home. We're just so happy to have you with us again today to talk about season 8 of your inspiring, nationally syndicated talk show.
Well, it is so true. And the welcome home, I am at home with Lakeshore. You know, as we've grown over the years, I think back about the 15 seasons before we went national, where we literally met with each individual station that would carry us. And I have to tell you, Lakeshore has always been our home base for a reason, because you were one of our very first yeses that believed in the mission, and also that hope belongs in front of people in the form of television. And that's what we do with the Whitney Reynolds Show. So as we've continued to grow, it is so important to always stay rooted with who's been good to us. And then also, you know, elevate what you guys are doing at Lakeshore. It's truly incredible.
Thank you for that. Again, Whitney, you have always been just so generous with us with sharing your story and with your audience, including the genesis of how you became the host and executive producer of your own talk show that bears your name. And with that, you know, I was thinking about how in previous conversations you shared that since you were a small child, you were always inquiring, always curious, and you always had this deep love for people. Your show's tagline is "Your Story Matters." And we've engaged in conversation about this before, but for the one or two people out there that may be unfamiliar, tell us about your story and why the tagline "Your Story Matters" is literally sewn into the fabric of your show.
You know, I love when I get asked this question, because it is exactly why I do what I do. At a very young age, I knew I was going to be on TV. And I always say, like, as my friends were dressing up as Disney princesses or Barbie for Halloween, I was Sally Jesse Raphael. I always had that gift to gab, had this weird dream laid on my heart at such a young age. And I say weird because I grew up in southern Oklahoma in an area where it wasn't like growing up in LA, where maybe you see people and you can really envision what it would look like. I didn't have anybody that I'd ever met that was on television, but I knew this was in my future. There was never a day in my life that I didn't know, that I can't remember that I was going to be on TV. It's weird because I have twins now that are 8. And I knew at 8 that I was going to do this. And so I look at them and they're still dreaming in a million different directions. And I love that too. But no, at a very young age, I knew I was going to do this. But it was based on my deck of cards that really molded me and shaped me into this deep storyteller, this woman who wants to be a safe space for hard moments that inspire change. And it was in those years that were very formative for me, with this dream on my heart and also my current situation, where I was able to combine the both. And I think that's one of the most beautiful gifts I was given in this life, is really not only having a dream, but also the purpose behind the dream. Because, you know, we can all dream and say, okay, I want to do big things. But when we really are fueled by powerful change, that's what's up. And that is how the Whitney Reynolds Show developed. It was this knowing of being a talk show host and loving people and loving stories and being, I guess, naturally able to talk to anybody, but then combining that with really this mission to be the TV show that my family needed in one of our hardest times. I did a TED Talk last year, Dee, and it was very interesting, though, because, you know, I tell people to go big with their story and to inspire change by owning it, but yet I haven't really gone there with mine. And I explained the way things make airtime with the Whitney Reynolds Show. And quite frankly, my family's story, the one I referenced a minute ago, wouldn't be on the Whitney Reynolds Show because it's not ready yet. There's several authors that are not okay with the sharing of it. And so by the time things make the Whitney Reynolds Show or the stories come to life here, it is one where the authors involved, if there's multiple authors, have all signed off on it. And they've gotten to a space that they know why they went through it and how they can help the people after them.
Whitney, you know, as I'm listening to you, I'm thinking about this. So I have this mantra that I live by, and I believe that we are in the same mind. I find that when I'm passionate about something, when I really and truly believe in something, I go full steam ahead with just asking for permission to get the buy-in, because I say to myself, what's the worst that they can say? No. And I alluded to this at the start of our conversation, that your talk show, The Whitney Reynolds Show, is nationally syndicated, and that's a really big deal. And so I just have to ask you, is that how you approach the powers that be at PBS to launch your nationally syndicated show?
Yeah, that is a great question because, you know, in this seat now, it's really easy to forget how many times I was told no. I was told no more than I can count, to the point that I had to be my best yes. And I say this in rooms all the time when I'm speaking, is be your best yes. Because it is really easy for people to say no, or if they say it in a more polite way, not yet. But to take that and hear it is something that can be very deflating when you know what you've been called to do. Mm-hmm. And so for me, every no along the way, it didn't just fuel my yes. It made me like understand. I would sit with that no for a second and I would say, okay, why am I not getting the yes I'm ready for? And for me, I tried to go national a long time before we did. We have only been nationally syndicated since 2021, but I had had many meetings before that day where I was told no. And I think it's really interesting because even in the moments where I'm like, okay, I didn't get the yes, but I know this is for me, being my best yes also meant digging deeper and understanding how we could get the yes. So it was kind of going back and not always redrawing the map, but just understanding how we get to that yes. And I have to say on this side of it, it's interesting because I was able to be a really, really good infant mom. And I say that because I had already had my TV show, and owning a TV show is very different than working for the network in itself. But I had twins, and I had twins at 30. And when I had them, I was still doing my TV show. But in a serendipitous time, my yes for PBS and to go with Nita and syndicate nationally was when my kids were going off to elementary school. And so I always talk about the basically the juggling of plates or the spinning of plates, however you want to call it. Yeah. And I remember in those years when I was getting the no's, there were a lot of plates spinning. And it was really a beautiful thing to get the yes and then also know, hey, oh my goodness, my kids are going off to kindergarten. So the timing couldn't have been better. But I also along the way knew that if I really was going to dream this into reality, that the no's had to be a keep going for it, but here's how we're going to do it and being my best yes.
That is so well put. Now, Whitney, season 8 kicks off Monday, October 21st at 6:30 p.m. on Lakeshore PBS. And while you film sit-down interviews at a studio on the west side of Chicago, I know that you're doing more on-location interviews this season. How do you find the stories and the voices you share on The Whitney Reynolds Show?
Yeah, you know, going back to that date, this is like a little secret thing for all the listeners right now. We always debut first on Lakeshore before it hits the nation. And and that is my little nod to Lakeshore forever and ever. We always debut with you guys and then it hits everything else after. In fact, now we air around the nation at the same time on World Channel through PBS, which is really incredible. But going back to this new on location thing, I am so stoked about it because you get to see us literally, you know, like in the kitchen with the Michelin star chef. And remember, Dee, we're not interviewing people because they're famous or they have the Michelin stars. Right. Yes, that's great. But these stories are one of grit and grace and how that combines together. And so since I've already alluded to it, I'll go ahead and tell you, we have Chef Duffy, who, you know, he has this great restaurant in Chicago. He is, again, Michelin star, but he also had this really tough past. And when I say tough, I mean, his story is one that when I was sitting across from in his restaurant and learning about his childhood, his dad not only murdered his mom, but also then committed suicide. It was a murder-suicide. Wow. And at such a young age, him witnessing not only that, but having to push forward, he channeled his energy into the kitchen. And that hard past actually helped him navigate some hard stuff in his current day of shutting down restaurants. And so what we learn is we're walking around his restaurant and in the kitchen and, you know, just in the ambiance of it all is all that hard stuff and moments really led him to today. And so being on location gave that inside look that maybe the studio could, and I love the studio interviews, don't get me wrong. The studio interviews are powerful, but these on-location shoots are really something. I'm so excited to debut this season. You know, you mentioned this before we went on air that I was, you know, across the United States last week. And it's really crazy because we are really navigating stories from all corners. And so I was in Dallas last week. We're shooting for our spring season, but it is one of those things that you'll keep seeing us on location when we need to be. And I also want to say a lot of that has to do with our partners of the show, because if we didn't have these strong partners at the Whitney Reynolds Show, we would not be able to fund this content of On Location. And so it's really cool to be in a season where we're like, okay, we can actually go do this now.
Right. So you just shared something so touching, so heartwarming, giving a sneak peek ahead of one of the guests, Chef Duffy, on season 8 of the Whitney Reynolds Show. And I just have to ask you, because you've spoken about this in the past, how you are able to just share stories that are so touching, so moving, but at the end, there's a passion. So I have to ask you, why do you ensure that there is purpose behind each guest, each episode, and certainly each season of the Whitney Reynolds Show?
Yes. So, you know, you said it earlier, our tagline, your story matters. And what we want the viewer to walk away with is that they could be on the bread aisle in their grocery store. And if they take a moment to get to know the person that might be looking at a different loaf than they are, they might look completely different than each other. They might come from opposite sides of town. But when we take that moment and we take the space to like give air to the story, one, we realize that everybody has a story and their story matters. But if we go a step deeper with that, we also realize that we've all been through hard moments. There's not a person listening right now that probably doesn't have a few dot points where they're like, okay, that was hard. But then how do we connect that dot to get to the next one saying, not only did I get through it, but I can help the person after me. And then when we take that moment and we realize that we all have these moments, we also understand we're not that different from each other. Again, we might look different. We might come from opposite sides. We might have been raised completely different, but we all have that common cord of we've been through things and we can inspire through those.
Now, Whitney, ahead of the premiere of each season, you always say it's your best season yet.
You know, I caught a little flack from, yes, I do. And I stand by that again.
But it's true. For the listening audience, I get a sneak peek at the description of all of the episodes for the new season. And I must say, from episode 1 with guest Dan Aykroyd, you alluded to Chef Duffy, you are coming in hot, which again says a lot because of your body of work, which is so moving, so inspiring, and certainly so uplifting. So what else can our audience expect from the Whitney Reynolds Show this season?
Well, we take a road trip and we sit down with Chris from Inc. 180, and he is one that is using his gift, which when I say Inc., he is a tattoo artist, and he is helping victims of sex trafficking and self-harm. He is talking everything from going in to where the Super Bowl is and helping victims escape and even help them rewrite their story by tattooing over maybe ink that was once there showing that they were held hostage or against their own will, and we actually sit down with a survivor. And it is truly incredible when we're in this location and we're watching him tattoo over what was something so painful for somebody. And then for them both to be vulnerable with their stories. And, you know, he does this free of charge. He is just one of those people that I would say not only is using his gift to help others, but he's also what I would call an angel here on earth, because he's not only using the gift, but giving it to people. So he's coming up this season. We also have some local talent that is on the national scale. We have Wendy Endy, which reminds us all that we can take, you know, maybe whatever we were given, if it was a used violin or, you know, this dream that maybe our parents passed down, doesn't matter what zip code we come from, and we can really create beautiful art. And Wendy Endy is one of those that opens up about really combining her talent, which is violin work, and then doing it with her own beat and rhythm and coming out of a zip code and showing other kids that they can do it too. So that is beautiful. We have NASCAR on, Brad Kosowski. He was in studio and we were with him. He is a driver-owned team. And what that means is that, like, basically he was working for another brand and he said, you know, I believe so much in this, I am going to be driver-owned. But he lost 100 consecutive races in a row.
Wow.
And then he went on to win again. And so I wanted to understand the concept of, like, how do you stay mentally in there when you've lost over 100 in a row? How do you get back up? How do you get the team to still follow you with that? And he is just a beautiful example of not only getting back up and going for it, but also helping others with his platform. We talk a lot about his charity. So we have a Holocaust survivor, and Janet just inspired. I mean, she is a showstopper. She could have been a whole show. So she's on one of our upcoming shows. And I tell you, I do say that every season is the best yet. And I might have to quit, which this is my life's work. I would have to quit if I didn't say my next season is the best, because every season stories pile on and they are people looking for a space like ours where they can say, yeah, I might have fame. I might have written a book. I might have a major song out. I might be a well-known author, but I have more than that that I want to inspire the nation with.
Whitney, you know, from the start, you have always made it clear that it was never your goal to be famous, but rather mm-hmm. to be a household name for hope. You share heartwarming stories, some of which have truly altered the trajectory of your guests' lives. But you tell the story with not only dignity and grace, but you always leave not only the guest, but the audience as well with hope, as well mm-hmm. as sincere gratitude. And so I have to share with you, as a viewer, as a fan of your work, that I am so excited and looking forward to the premiere of season 8 on October 21st on Lakeshore PBS.
Oh, Dee, you always just make my day. Thank you so much for even saying you are a viewer, because sometimes we forget that our friends are viewers, our neighbors are viewers. And the big thing is, I just want people to walk away knowing that their story matters and there's hope in the hard chapters, and we can truly inspire the person that's right across from us when we step into owning our stories.
Whitney Reynolds is the host, executive producer, and chief inspo officer of The Whitney Reynolds Show. Whitney, again, as always, thank you for joining us on Regionally Speaking, giving our listening audience a sneak peek of season 8 of The Whitney Reynolds Show. And we look forward to the premiere on Monday, October 21st at 6:30 p.m.
Thank you so much, Dee.
Emmy-nominated Whitney Reynolds' news background and passion for people have been combined to create a show that is changing the world of talk. The Whitney Reynolds Show educates, motivates, and makes a difference one topic at a time. The Whitney Reynolds Show is an independently owned television show that ran for nearly 10 seasons before the show was picked up for national syndication. The show airs nationally on PBS, with Lakeshore PBS as the presenting station.
And welcome back to Regionally Speaking. I'm your host, Dee Dotson.
The presidential election historically has had an impact on the markets, both in the weeks leading up to as well as after Election Day. And according to T. Rowe Price, in presidential election years, market volatility was at its highest in the 1 month and 3 months prior to voting day.
As another heated election inches closer, Northwest Indiana financial advisor Greg Hammer believes investors can take steps to protect their portfolio regardless of the political headlines. He is with us today to provide tips on what investors should consider now to prepare their portfolios for any pre- and post-election related volatility. Greg, as always, thank you for joining us on Regionally Speaking.
Thanks for having me, Andy.
Absolutely, Greg. So, Greg, we mentioned in our intro that in the presidential election years, market volatility was at its highest shortly before and after voting day. We're experiencing this same volatility in real time as both the S&P and NASDAQ saw the worst week of 2024 in the beginning of September. And then 2 weeks later, the market closed at a new high on September 16th. Is this volatility in anticipation of the election?
Election years are generally more volatile than non-election years. The volatility can often just be attributed to the fact that the markets despise uncertainty, and elections bring a lot of uncertainty to the country. So in addition to the election, not only the uncertainty of who's going to be in office, there were other factors as well contributing to the market's volatility, the slowing economy, inflation. You know, it's come down a bit, but definitely not to the pre-pandemic levels, and housing and food are still high, and then just the general recession fears, especially last month. The good news is that the market volatility historically tends to settle quickly after a presidential election winner is announced, regardless of the political party that has voted in.
Right, right. Now, Greg, speaking of the Fed's decision last week to cut interest rates, does this have an impact on market volatility?
Oh, absolutely. The Federal Reserve is often more of an important economic player than the election in terms of the market volatility because of its control over the interest rates. They can have such an immediate impact on the economy and the markets.
Greg, you know, investors can be very reactive to market volatility. You've mentioned previously on the show that emotions are one of the biggest enemies to investing. Why is that?
Well, most investors invest their money into the stock market, planning or hoping to grow their money, not lose it. But it's inevitable that the markets will fluctuate. Even though investors are well aware that there are times when the markets will dip or correct, when they do, it often makes them want to pull their money out of the market. So unfortunately, when investors sell stocks, they potentially miss out on the substantial gains after the market rebounds.
Now, Greg, I can imagine that this is very challenging for investors to stay the course when they see their investments lose value. I'd like to discuss some strategies that an investor can use to prepare for market volatility that will lessen the likelihood of them making an impulsive decision to buy or sell. What is the first strategy that any investor can implement?
Well, to avoid making emotional decisions regarding your investments, one of the things I think is just invest regularly, right? Make it a habit to regularly invest in a specific amount, maybe a specific amount of money, regardless of the market fluctuations. This is what we term dollar cost averaging, and that can help average out the purchase price of the investments while encouraging, you know, investors to stay in the market.
That makes sense. Now, Greg, what are some other strategies that investors can use?
Yep. I think one of the most important things is decide on your appetite for risk. You know, what is your asset allocation? So asset allocation includes, you know, the types of asset classes, meaning stocks versus bonds and cash, that would be included in your portfolio. And the amount of each that you choose to own will be based on your financial goals, you know, your time horizon, and like I mentioned, your risk tolerance. So after you decide, you know, which assets to own, then you can diversify investments. Unfortunately, asset allocation in and of itself will not mitigate the risk completely. So it's crucial to still diversify your investments within your asset classes as well. So for example, you know, when you're owning stocks, it would be recommended to own stocks from different size companies as well as stocks from a variety of sectors like tech or healthcare. You know, when you look at the bond side, you might purchase bonds from more than one issue or try bond laddering. You can also include investments like mutual funds or ETFs that incorporate a pool of investments.
Okay, great. But let me ask you, what about individuals who are nearing retirement? What portfolio strategies should they consider implementing to prepare for market volatility?
Yeah, and that's a great question because you need to build your portfolio and invest based on your time horizon. So anyone who is near retirement, let's say spring of 2020, when the pandemic was causing havoc on the stock market, knows what a feeling it is to lose your portfolio and not have the years to make that up. So since no one knows what the markets will do, it's smart to position your investments appropriately for your time horizon, meaning when you'll need to start withdrawing the funds, you know, so we don't want to have the market drop dramatically before that need arises. So the more time you have before retirement, you can own investments with more risk if you have that appetite because you can assume a little bit more of the volatility. Now, of course, you know, that gives you the potential for more growth. That's why you would carry the risk. Whereas, you know, as you tend to get closer to retirement, it's often recommended to move to lower volatility or lower risk investments, even implement some guaranteed instruments. The returns aren't as high, but there's a lot less risk.
Greg, can you give us one more tip for investors of all ages?
Yeah, rebalance your portfolio. You know, it's easy for it to get out of whack. It's wise to review the portfolio on a regular basis, sometimes quarterly, to rebalance or make adjustments to your investments so that you can stay on track to reach your financial goals.
You know, Greg, it'll be interesting to see if the stock market experiences more volatility as the election gets closer and then after the election as well. Before I let you go, do you have any final words for a listening audience?
Investing, you know, in the market is a delicate balance of taking on enough risk, you know, so that you get the benefit of growth, but not so much risk that, you know, you can jeopardize, you know, things and lose a lot of money. So while we are talking today about the recent market volatility related to the election, if you build a solid portfolio, you know, based on a strategy, then it can withstand volatility, whether it's from the election currently or any other major event, right? So it's important to do your homework if you want to do your own investing or talk to a professional to ensure you're implementing appropriate strategies for your financial goals, especially, you know, if you're in that window of 10 years prior or 10 years after retirement where volatility can wreak a lot of havoc on what your retirement income will look like.
Greg Hammer is the president and CEO of Hammer Financial Group. Greg, as always, we thank you for joining us on Regionally Speaking, and we can't wait to have you back with us next month.
Thanks so much, Dee. I always enjoy.
That's it for Regionally Speaking for this week. Thanks to our guest, and we'll be back with you next week with an all-new show.